TTB. Read it.
Hello.
Back again.
That's great. This. For the listener, just very briefly, I'm being double mic'd, and you've put a red bulb on.
Oh yeah.
I love the red bulb. It's
giggity.
Do you know? I don't know where our social is these days, but I've got a couple of lovely pictures, so I'm going to post them after the podcast.
Okay.
There you go. It's a promise to you, listener.
Podcast 4, 2024, as we enter April. So fourth month, fourth podcast.
Nice.
Get it.
It's a good rate. It's a good rate of success, this.
It's almost like the old days, yeah.
Yeah.
So five albums, Kissing Mother's Grace of Deep Well, Judas Priest, Invincible Shield, Yard Act, Where's My Utopia, The Dandy Warhols, Rockmaker, and Masterpiece, How to Make a Masterpiece. Oh, see what he did there.
I see what he did there.
Yeah.
Didn't catch me
before. So let's start off by the... Well, with the fifth album, or sixth album if you count A Very Casey Christmas, or I suppose ninth album if you count the three she made before.
Yada. We did the
same trailer.
Time.
Yeah. We have reviewed all the previous five...
Major label
releases by Miss Musgraves. And it seems to be acoustic time on Planet Casey, Pete.
It is. It's a deeper... It's a more mature, and it's a definitely warmer sounding Casey on this album. All the experimental pop stuff, the sonic stuff, the stuff that's peppered the last couple of albums, that's all just been put to one side. This is very much folk pop territory. I think. This is very much, I don't want to say what Taylor Swift did, but you know what I mean. It's very much in that space.
Although bizarrely, she didn't do what, in some ways, because of the way the last couple of albums went, you were almost expecting the next step to be the total pop album.
Yes,
in the way indeed. That Miss Swift did.
Yeah. It's like, this is the way it was going. Forget the national, I'm now going to work with Stuart Price. That sort of direction. If you're still with me, kids, well done. No more the experimental pop, but no more also... Although some tales of love on here, or love tentatively reacquainted, but no more inevitable heartbreak or divorce. I think that's also been put very much to bed, except in the sense that there's very much a reflection on this album about a much more mature artist, a Casey that was obviously always there, but is now clearly into that decade of her life where she's sort of looking backwards a little bit, thinking... Well, that was all good. That was all fun. How do I move forward? I get nostalgic about... There are nods to the past, I think, here as well. Definitely. Tales of getting higher, never too far away. But at the same time, it's sort of with that added wink and a nod of someone that's sort of grown past that and is now sort of looking forward tentatively, positively. I describe this album... occasionally... I write these notes ahead of these podcasts and I write something that sounds absolutely absurd when I say it out loud, but I've written it down here. It's like a warm folk blanket.
Oh, I like it.
Perfect for a late summer eve or a winter afternoon. Which I think what I'm trying to say is, it's an album for the seasons.
Have you been using AI to create your notes, please?
No, but it sounds like that AI might do a better job. Look, I really like this album. It's all great. I've obviously got my list of tracks here at the end that I really like the album.
Okay.
I hope that's coming across. but there are some tracks that I really liked. And I'd have to say they are Deeper Well.
Yeah.
Too Good to Be True.
Okay, interesting.
Okay.
I'll come back to that one.
Right, okay. Okay. I'll leave you to deal with that one. The Architect.
Yeah. Which is her back with Shane McNally, who obviously co-wrote most of the first two albums.
Yeah.
With her.
And I have to say, if I'm being hypercritical, because I like to be occasionally, the album sort of tails off towards the end, but I did like Lonely Millionaire.
which is the kind of solely, the really kind of solely kind of like, yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine that being really popular on radio.
Yes. How's that feel? There you go. Complaints over here.
I think this album opens brilliantly.
I agree.
Cardinal, and then the title track, Deeper Well, which you mentioned, which I think is the best song on the album, both lyrically and musically. Particularly, I like it talks about, does talk about her relationship and the splitting up of, you know, breaking up of a divorce.
Yeah,
the breaking up of a divorce.
Yeah,
at
the minute. But I didn't say it was completely forgotten.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It is there.
But I also like to also kind of reassess life generally, and, you know, including giving up other things, including like the Mary Jane.
Mm.
You know, who would have thought it? She's now in the or don't camp when it comes to rolling up a joint when following your arrow.
Yeah. Very good.
And Cardinal, which precedes it, is also brilliant. It sets the scene for the album. It's very kind of late 60s, early 70s, Laurel Canyon, kind of flowers in your hair, kind of folk, kind of singer-songwriter-y stuff. Which has the, and it has that feel throughout the whole album, even though the album was actually recorded in New York, so East Coast rather than West Coast.
New York gets a mention at one point as well.
It does. Interestingly, you mentioned Too Good to Be True, which is the third track on the album, and on the first couple of listens, my first note writing this down was, oh, hello.
Oh, sorry.
Live music. Was perhaps that this was the worst track on the album.
No.
And I thought the title was a misnomer. Because I felt it was a bit too, for the first few listens, I thought it was a bit too twee and cheesy, particularly the chorus bit. Mm-hmm. I've kind of mellowed a bit on this now. And realised that my initial kind of response to it might be due to two things. One, the fact that I genuinely think that the opening two tracks are the best two tracks on the album.
Yeah.
So it follows what I think are the two best tracks. And also because it interpolates the Anna and Alex song Breathe 2 AM from her debut album Wreck of the Day, which is a song that I think is absolutely brilliant. So every time this song comes on, I keep wanting to sing the Anna Nelick song rather than the Kacey Musgraves song.
Yeah.
So that's probably what the issue has been for me. Other than that, I agree with you. I think it's a. And I agree with you in this and say, if I was going to criticise the album, I'd say it's a bit easy listening.
Yeah, I see.
But then I'd say, is that necessarily? Yeah. But then I'd also say, is that necessarily a bad thing?
No.
You know.
I don't think it is.
And as you said, I like the fact that we've changed direction again. So, yeah. So the natural progression from the way she was going was almost to do 1989.
Yes.
A pure pop music.
Whereas
actually she's kind of gone back more to a kind of stripped down, kind of rootsy type
to where
thing. Which I like. I agree with the things you mentioned, the tracks you mentioned, Lemmy and the Architect, good. I also liked Giver and Taker, and I really liked the kind of the chorus of that, which was like, because I would give you everything that you wanted, but I'd never ask for any of it back. And if I could take as much as I needed, I would take everything that you had. Which I think is...
Yes.
I think the kind of lulling you into the kind of like, oh, yeah. There's nothing. No, I'd take it all.
Yeah.
I quite like.
Quite like that.
I would say for me, it's an album that I like, but I'm not sure that I love yet, at least yet.
Not yet.
Which is very un-Casey for me.
It is very un, because you're normally immediately hooked on these. I think it's a grower. And before we round off this particular review, we were talking about AI. I have to say, though, on Spotify, other brands are available. I find this a bit strange.
Are the pictures? I think the pictures were taken. I think the pictures were taken by her sister. I think.
Yeah, but the movement.
Oh yes, yeah. Oh. Yeah. I've bought the vinyl. But I don't think I got the smelly version. Because I think the packaging I think was meant to. She worked with some company to create a deeper well smell.
Oh, I see. So for the purposes of the tape, Detective Sergeant Peter is showing Detective Sergeant Scott the picture on Spotify of the slightly moving image of the album with the flower sort of moving in the breeze slightly.
Yes.
Which is a little bit weird. But there you go, AI.
Wonderful. Indeed. Stuff. So where do you go after
where do you go after that?
Clearly you go for the 19th studio album by one of the pioneers of heavy metal, Judas Priest, Invincible Shield.
Oh, is that where we're going? Wonderful stuff.
First time we've reviewed them on the podcast.
Is it? Wow.
Although we have interviewed.
Interviewed? God, no, we haven't.
We have reviewed.
That too.
Some of their metal cohorts, so Black Sabbath, Iron Maiden, Scorpions, Kiss in the past. This album comes literally 50 years after they released their debut album, Rock and Roller. And all the surviving members, I think there are two, three surviving members, are well into their 70s now.
Can't believe 50, my God.
I know, it's amazing. And what can I say? Opener Panic Attack kicks off with a riff which reappears mid-song before the guitar solo, so it reminds me of Tom Sawyer by Rush. That's a rock aside. But it's a fine example of the type of thing that Priest have been putting out for years. Proper fast-moving heavy metal with dual guitars blasting and Halford doing what he does best. You know, Rob Halford, it has to be said, is probably one of the most distinctive voices in music, and his falsetto and screaming pretty much set the bar for all metal rock singers that have followed. And particularly, we've done quite a lot of growling, screaming metal in the podcast, so... And it's kind of immediately classic metal in its most metal, so to speak. This pace continues for the next couple of tracks. So you've got Serpent the King and the title track are also kind of like very much floor, pedal to the floor, kind of like... Slows a bit then with the next couple of tracks, Devil in Disguise and its partner, kind of Gates of Hell, which is actually one of my favourite tracks on the album. But for me, I think it's actually kind of bizarrely... when the album hits its midpoint, where it really kind of kicks in, and you think, this is good.
Yeah.
So it really shines for me from the kind of midpoint of the classic rock ballad, Crown of Horns, which is then followed by Fast Paced and Catchy As God Is My Witness and Trial by Fire. This is followed by three more tracks, if you're not having the deluxe album version. An ending with Giants in the Sky, which is another personal favourite of mine of the record. If you are listening to the extended version, you then get Fight for Life, Vicious Circle and Lodger, which again, all stand up really well to what's gone before. For me, if I'm going back to my youth, a long time ago, in my teens, Judas Priest would have been in my top 10 bands, even top 5 for most of my teens. And I own most of their first 10 albums, up until including 1986's Turbo, although I've not owned any since. And they're rightly considered to be one of the kind of genre-defining metal bands, have kind of set the kind of template for how metal has progressed over the years. And it pleases me to say that 50 years on from their first album, that this album doesn't let their legacy down for me. It's a really good rock metal album by any standard of the era, and I enjoyed it. I genuinely enjoyed it. For me, the metal gods live on, Pete. It's fun,
and it has every element of a classic metal album. I mean, all of them, they're all here. And do you know, everything I'm about to say might sound like I'm having some sort of dig, but all the cliches are here, and I'm not having a dig at all. It's absolutely delicious that you've got the high floral guitar solos, you know the ones.
Yeah.
You've got the repetitive drumming riffs that are very intense. You've got the lyrics, obviously. What more could you want? What I particularly enjoyed from the album, you've said the opening is very fast and very strong. It opens strong. With Panic Attack, I mean, it's very much an 80s metaler. Even has a synth intro, which could come from 40 years ago.
It does have a synth, but that synth that also harks back to the synth that's in 1960s album Turbo. It's that same kind of sound.
It feels referential. It clearly is, and that's followed by the Serpent and the King with the dueling guitars. Whenever we do metal on this show, on this podcast, I always love the dueling guitars. After that, as you say, it does settle into a more familiar groove. And again, you've got Giants in the Sky in there, which again feels a little bit more cliched, but I think it sort of settles into a pace. You mentioned Gates of Hell, which I liked. I also like Crown of Thorns, which is the classic midpoint, slightly slower one.
Yes.
Definitely not a ballad, but you know on who I'm getting at. And then you've also got As God Is My Witness, which leads very nicely into Trial of Fire.
Yes,
there was a lovely sort of link at the end of that, which just went straight into the next track, which was brilliant. And then right towards the end, you've got Sons of Thunder as well, which I really enjoyed.
Not bad for a bunch of 70-year-olds.
these are old guys doing metal, but doing it right and doing it well. What more do you want?
Indeed. Moving on to some younger guys. And there's a girl in the band as well. I think there might be a girl. There's a girl in the band as well, isn't there, Yardat? Or not? Come on in.
Right.
Oh, no, they just have a girl singing.
Research has let me down. They do have a female vocalist on this album.
Katie J. Pearson, sorry, we'll get to you.
Sorry.
So Yardat, Where's My Utopia, second album. We reviewed their first album on podcast. I think it was podcast
2022.
And we both liked the first album.
We did. I think I rated it very highly.
Do we like the second album, Pete?
I think I rate it very highly. this is very much Yardat Act 2. I mean, if you love the first album, there's a good chance you're going to really love this.
I would agree.
It is an absolute builder. I love the first because it was so stripped down and so raw, and they've done the trick here of adding the richer production, which makes it sound deeper and makes it sound more accessible. But actually, they've lost nothing of the rawness as well, which is brilliant. This album comes with more samples. It comes with additional colour in terms of the production. It has even subtle shades of Hot Chip dropped digitally in here and there. There's also loops and bits reminiscent of Gorillaz as well, so this added pop sheen, particularly the opener and Illusion, and they even mock it. And is it track 2, We Make Hits?
Yes.
And even at the end he says, if this isn't a hit, it was ironic.
We're being ironic. One of the best lines of the podcast.
Exactly. It's a great sequel to the original. I also really liked, there's a few tracks I really liked, The Dream Job, Fizzy Fish, Down by the Stream. Down by the Stream was interesting because that really did hark back to the debut in terms of that sort of storytelling.
Well, about bullying and being a bully.
And also being bullied. And it sort of drops in that second voice. I love that. Was it Pete Pertington of Parlington and Dougie Duggington and Pete's cousin Dean? You remember Dean?
Yeah.
All of that. I love all that.
I think it's in Broad. It might be for Milton Keynes.
Yes, exactly. Which is such a northern thing to say. Coming from north. Blackpool Illuminations, speaking of which.
Oh my god, yes.
Fresh back from there myself. That was brilliant. That was just a brilliant, clever use of the couch technique. You know, like when you're telling a story and then someone answers back, like you are actually telling the story.
Well, it's like a therapy session, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like therapy. You know, it's like self-esteem all over again.
Indeed.
I love that. And of course, it also linked to, you know, being a son, but also being a father. And then there was that line about the band's progress right at the end as well.
Yeah. So why the fuck is I wondering what wankers would think of album 2?
Exactly. And then you've got the amazing The Vineyard for the North. Probably the most positive song about climate change I've ever heard. I think I might have done spoilers. What's your favourite album of this podcast? It's probably this one.
It's Andy Warhol's. I agree with everything you've said, actually.
Yeah.
Which is obviously going to be annoying for most of our listeners and go again. Again?
Again?
Can you disagree more often?
Occasionally.
We do disagree occasionally.
Used to disagree
but more, it's just occasionally. I agree. This continues the fun quirkiness of their debut. But as you say, I think it's much more musically daring and varied.
Yes.
As you say, you've got rock, pop, hip hop, and more. So for me, I was thinking we're going from Talking Heads to The Streets, yeah, to Gorillaz, to Ian joining the Blockheads.
Yeah.
And first, the other people along the way. My favourite track you actually didn't mention, which is probably The Undertow.
Right.
Which I really, really like. Possibly because it's more catchy and just kind of... It's possibly, along with Dream Job, probably the most commercial...
Yes, okay, yeah.
...thing of them. Although I do like When the Laughter Stops, which does feature, yeah, as sort of mentioned a minute ago, Katie J. Pearson, who is a fellow Brit with a couple of albums to her name. And I think, actually, the introduction of the female vocal... into their oeuvre works remarkably well.
It does, really well.
I like that a lot. I just say Blackpool in the Nations is just it's basically a spoken word. We've had lots of spoken word stuff in this pod pods over the last 4 or 5 years. It's like, yeah, someone did spoken word, okay, yeah, yeah, fine. Like I said, it just felt like a therapy session. He's going, I'm gonna give you this thing from my childhood that's affected me for the whole of my life.
But yeah, it's almost a little bit of arch irony about it as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's that moment, like, it was just like, I was, what's your greatest fear? My greatest fear is being buried at the bottom of a lake and drowning. Do you want to talk about that? No, I'd rather get back onto this.
Yes. I have to be honest.
I was laughing. I was literally lolling in real life.
Yeah. So I was thinking, yeah, I'm with you there. Yes. But let's talk about something else. Yes. Let's talk about something else. Dandy Warhol's Rock Maker. 12th studio album by the Dandy Warhols, a band who are still probably best known for songs like Bohemian Like You and We Used to Be Friends, which, funny enough, we heard about an hour ago.
Yeah.
In our
pre-podcast
drink. Yeah. And it used to be the theme tune for Veronica Mars, for anyone that was fans of that particularly.
A massive fan of that show.
It was a brilliant show.
I never saw an episode.
Yeah. Not talking to you anymore. So yeah, that's obviously We Used to Be Friends. A long time ago, We Used to Be Friends. This is a long time ago. Distortion was my friend.
Yeah.
We've gone fuzzy on this record. And I have to say, until this morning, I think I was probably going to dismiss this album as mostly tedious and unengaging. But the lesson of multiple listens, Pete. They stepped in to prevent this.
Uh-huh. Good.
Possibly.
Yeah.
And I think it's possibly because the album kicks off with what is quite dirgy and repetitive music from the opener, Doomsday Bells, Tonic Wine, and the puntastic Danzig with myself. latter of which features Frank Black, one of three guest artists on the album. And indeed, to be fair, could be a Pixies tune. It is very much, you could imagine it on a Pixies album. Without any kind of thing, which makes it quite fun for that kind of reason. Album does have lighter, poppier moments, to be fair. Summer of Hate, for example. But then again, there's also kind of like really kind of subpar Ramones rubbish like Love Thyself. Debbie Harry crops up again, just as well, to lift I Will Never Stop Loving You from being a very much a slow dirge. As seemingly sung by Frank Zappa's Central Scrutinizer. I'd Like to Hope My Problem, one of my favourite tracks on the album, because it reminds me more of their 90s material, but only with additional slash. And, you know, who doesn't want some additional slash in their life?
Who doesn't want
that? Yeah. And obviously alcohol and cocaine, marijuana, nicotine. Nods, lifts, borrows, depending on your point of view, somewhat heavily from Queens of the Stone Age, feeling good hit for summer, but also is one of the better points of the album. So I started off really not liking this album, warmed to it a bit, but I still think it's the bad bits outweigh the good bits, to be honest.
Okay.
But bizarrely, the dirgy bits at the start are now my favourite bits.
Oh, right. So I don't mind the dirgy bits at all.
Yeah, so they're my favourite bits. The first three tracks are arguably my favourite tracks, so, apart from, alcohol.
Yeah. I actually quite like this overall. I know where you're coming from in terms of derivative this and everything else. But actually, I found from the mostly instrumental dirgy opening, it's a heavier Dandies than perhaps one might remember from back in the day.
Yes.
And there's very much, throughout the album, lyrically, a morbid fascination with either self-destruction or the end of the world.
Yeah, it's not an uplifting album, lyrically.
It's not, no. But it's done with humour.
Yes.
So, in particular, Dancing With Myself, which you mentioned, Root of All Evil, and Real People. I think that really comes through. I also like The Cross, which is the sort of Dandies Do Industrial. I don't mind a bit of industrial, even if it's lightweight. Alcohol.
That didn't work for me.
It worked for me fine. Alcohol, cocaine, marijuana, and nicotine, all very good. I did actually like the old, old fashioned rock, forgive me, of Summer of Hate and I'd Like to Help You With Your Problems. I actually didn't mind.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's good fun.
A bit more sort of enjoyable, a bit more accessible. And Love Thyself towards the end. Now I took that over the Debbie Harry one, to be honest with you. I mean, Debbie Harry, great. Obviously.
Well, Debbie Harry is great.
Yeah,
Debbie Harry is the greatest. She is the best thing on the featuring Debbie Harry song.
Yeah, she is on the featuring Debbie Harry song. But I took that one as pretty conclusive in the final third. So. Overall, my opinion of this album is probably better than yours.
I think it certainly is. So let's move on to the last one. Masterpiece. How to Make a Masterpiece. Debut album by Masterpiece, also known as Peace Okezie. A Brit. Fun pop indie album, Pete.
Yeah, I love fun pop indie albums. I love modern indie albums. And this one certainly starts modern and indie.
This will be the one. This will be the one with the references in the week. Could have mentioned in the
bar. Again, in the previous venue we're at, for the first time in a very long time, they played Hardfi, and both you and I looked at each other and went, "Yep, that comes up in the podcast."
And they'd also played Block Party before. We went, "Yeah."
Definitely in the ballpark here. I also want to pull out late 90s Blur. Particularly around the track Lodge, in particular, is very much in that place. But overall, I was going to say, indie pop moves along with pace, but actually, as the album progresses, I think there's definitely more originality coming through. I actually think the second half of the album, as such, is stronger than the first. I think once it sort of finds its feet, you get a masterpiece album. Which new to us, but actually is really good. I really like the tracks. Panic 101. Sick in the Bathroom.
I love Sick in the Bathroom.
Start You Up is quite good. And even Shangalanga Badang has its moments. Also, I did mention Hot Chip earlier, right?
You did.
A bit less subtle here. In terms of the shades of Hot Chip, but I might be fake and Heaven very much in the Hot Chip ballpark as well.
Yeah,
or that could be the Block Party ballpark.
I agree.
But that's not to say that this is purely derivative of something else. This is actually a really good album. I like it.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely interesting from a obviously good newish artist to do this.
Definitely.
On the influence thing, I also threw in LCD Sound System. And also, slightly more left field, and I think this is more for the vibe and the Attitude, Charlie XCX.
Ooh.
Oh,
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's as you say, it starts very much in a kind of certainly on the kind of more in the kind of block party kind of area with Los Narcos, Lodge, Panic 101. Although what's interesting in Panic 101, also interesting about the album itself, is he's worked with writer, producer, Julien, Bonetta, who's most famous for his work with One Direction and all the members of One Direction since they've gone solo.
Wow.
So it's helped co-write and produce this album. And I think Panic 101, for me, is the most... And I mean this in a good way, not a bad way. Mm. The most 1D sounding thing. In fact, that it's very polished. Very, you can imagine it be on the radio and kind of go, yeah, I can imagine this being a big pop tune. Poptastic. A bit like Start You Up as well, as I said, which is very, very popular, with an absolutely great bass line. And in fact, bass lines in this album are really, really good.
Yes.
So thumbs up to whoever's playing bass on this record, because there's some really, really good bass lines on it. I like Lou Song as well.
Yes.
I like the lyrics to that.
I like the comedy of Lou Song.
The kind of thing about basically you're out with your girlfriend and some other woman's trying to hit on you. And obviously, it's very much a British thing as well, because it's obviously about... Yeah, the whole idea of going into the loo for a shag kind of thing. Toilet for anyone listening.
Toilets for anyone listening outside the UK.
Yes. Not that will happen. But
yeah, I love that. I'm giving
or the bathroom. Or the bathroom.
Yes. Or the restroom. Where are you listening? Giving off single vibes and...
Yeah. I'm surprised on single bathroom you didn't mention the clear DM reference, which is, reach out, touch me.
Oh, yes.
Followed by I'll keep on loving you, which is clearly the Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Indeed.
Literally straight after it. You're thinking, oh, ticking lots of boxes on this one.
Haven't spotted those boxes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, it's an album that's half an hour long, which, as regular listeners will know,
we love it.
Always pleases us. Good fun. And certainly, I think Masterpiece is someone to watch.
Yeah.
Wow, we're done. So, right. So your favourite album, we know.
Oh, no, I've already revealed it.
Yeah.
Shit. I didn't mean to.
Which is good, because I'm not sure.
It's Yard Act, though.
It is Yard Act. I'm not sure. Oh.
So we're into April. So April is the moment when I start to see the albums come through. And there's definitely one or two contenders here for the year. And don't worry, Casey's definitely there. But for me, it's Yard Act.
This is one of the weird ones when, on pure enjoyment factor, at this moment in time, I would say Judas Priest, bizarrely. But I know come the end of the year, it'll be Yard Act.
Yeah.
Of those albums.
Yeah.
But... As you said, Casey won't definitely be thereabouts anyway.
And again, for the purposes of the tape, you are wearing a Casey Musgrave t-shirt.
I am.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for the sake of this podcast, I'm going to go Judas Priest, because I'm genuinely impressed that... I'm always impressed with a band, any band that's been going for 50 years. They can churn out an album that's actually...
It's actually quite good.
That's actually quite good, frankly.
Yeah. It's not throwaway.
Yeah, no. So for that alone, I'm going to go Judas Priest for this particular podcast.
Excellent. I'm sticking with Yard Act.
And we will see you again.
Oh, we love you, Casey.
See you hopefully again in a month's time.
See you next time.
Bye.
The CTB Music Podcast is a Vineland production.